This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The Northeast slowly recovers from the storm. Five teenagers are found dead in a Florida motel room, and a man with a machete is shot in southwest Portland.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, December 28th, 2010. A man armed with a machete was shot by Portland police officers in southwest Portland Monday evening, according to Portland Police Sergeant Pete Simpson. The 34-year-old man was expected to survive. According to police, the man's parents called 911, concerned that their son was armed with a machete standing in the street outside of their home on Southwest Dakota near Gabriel Park. The parents indicated the man had been suicidal and had talked of committing suicide by cop, according to Sergeant Simpson. The man's mother and father were in the home when they made the 911 call.
He stands in the street. He solves his own problem.
Officers were trying to determine how to deal with the man when he confronted them with the machete. At first, officers fired beanbag rounds at him and tasers, but that did not stop him. Then an officer shot the suspect. A neighbor reported hearing four shots in rapid succession. A second neighbor reported hearing what sounded like a crash. No officers were hit by the gunfire. The man was taken by ambulance to OHSU.
You know, it's just emasculating to be shot by a beanbag gun. You know, there's no way you can feel good about yourself as a man if the cop's choice, if they don't even take you seriously enough to go right for the taser or the pepper spray. Their first thing is basically just hitting you with a tiny, tiny little chair for children.
I don't think it's a tiny chair.
I'm just saying, but I mean, you know, it'd be like if they hit you with something called a jelly gun.
They call them beanbags, but they're full of, like, aren't they full of, like, lead shot?
I don't think so.
I think they'll really hurt you.
I don't think those are... I think those are ball bearings. These are like a polymer. They're like a plastic. I think it's like a little tiny version of that comfy sack, but it's less comfy, presumably.
Well, yes, and it's being propelled at you at hundreds of miles per hour.
Also, it'll break your bones.
Yeah, so.
I'm just saying, it just doesn't sound like a very manly thing to be shot with, you know?
Well, no, and if you're standing out there wielding a machete, you're probably feeling very macho, and then you get hit with something that supposedly goes, ow! Ow! Stop that!
And
ow!
That's exactly what I pictured the guy doing, too, is not even really so much of a scream or a grunt, just sort of You are listening to Legion of News. It is Cascadia.fm. That is the fine media outlet bringing you this program as we speak. It is Tuesday, December 28th, 2010. Thank you for coming by. Later on this hour, we have your entertainment news, also Science on the March. If you want to get this program as an iTunes download, you can do that later
and
on in the day. And you can also get it as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. And it's available on your mobile device as well at mobile.com. mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
A subway sleepover wasn't what New Yorkers anticipated when they boarded trains on Sunday evening, but 15-hour bathroomless stints on the stalled D train weren't the only surprise of the massive storm that swept through the Northeast on Sunday. After a blizzard abated on Monday morning, New York City was still at a standstill, cabs and crowds replaced with an eerie white silence. Despite the calm, the two-day snowstorm, the region's largest in 4 years, left chaos in its wake, according to the New York Times. Thousands of passengers remain trapped at airports and train terminals, while thousands of homes in the Northeast are still without power. Officials said on Monday night that it might take several days to excavate the region's cities from the snow. Despite the 65-mile-per-hour winds and snowdrifts still blanketing New York City, Mayor Michael Bloomberg was sanguine about the situation. "The world has not come to an end," he said at a news briefing. "The city is going fine. Broadway shows were full last night. There are lots of tourists here enjoying themselves. I think the message is the city goes on." Meanwhile, thousands of airline passengers have had to reschedule their flights because of the blizzard on the East Coast. The founder of FlyersRights.org, Kate Haney, says airlines are not required to do nearly as many things as people think they are when bad weather forces delays and cancellations.
Doesn't this just sound like an organization that was created in her living room when she got a copy of PageMaker for Christmas?
She got bumped from a flight once and decided, that's it. I'm starting a group.
Got herself an angel fire page in a dream. What is this cut?
Flying one.
"They don't owe you hotels or taxis or much of anything when there's a weather problem. So that's why we fought so hard for contingency plans and for the passenger bill of rights."
Let me understand this. So she's decided to form an organization because a company who did not anticipate nor could not prevent the weather from changing and the storm from coming didn't just give her free stuff.
Yeah. And there are ways of
America's
finding out.
Awesome.
There are ways of finding out what airlines will provide in the case of, you know, a layover or something like that. There are ways of finding out what the differences are between the companies. You've purchased something from the company and you get like a lot of fine print on your ticket that says that, you know, you're signing a contract essentially.
And also you're buying an airline ticket, not a hotel room. So yeah. Why don't you just take what they give you and shut it?
But also, you know, you spend a little bit of time online before you fly and you can find out what, you know, what your rights are in a situation like this. And, you know, I think
really your right is to either be on the plane or to not be on the plane. I think beyond that, I don't really know that the airport is promising you anything.
Well, some airlines, though, it's all very complicated.
But it has to do with the word right. In other words,
yeah.
If some airlines are doing it and some airlines aren't, by definition, then it's not a right. Mm-hmm. It's a thing that some airlines are doing and some airlines aren't. A right is a thing that, like, you are inherently entitled to by dint of your status as a human being.
Well, yes, but I was using that in the context of your right as a customer of a specific company.
Well, yeah, no, I understand that,
yeah.
But I'm saying that you and I always want to call them Trilby Lundberg, but they're not. Whatever her name is.
She's a Trilby Lundberg, though.
What is her name?
Her name is Kate Haney.
I don't think Trilby Lundberg. I think Trilby Lundberg would have thought ahead, and she would have brought, like, her own pup tent.
Yeah.
And she'd be, you know, she'd have one of those, and she'd have, like, one of those USB hand warmers, and she'd just be making her own way inside the tarmac.
She'd have one of those little packets that you can bring with you in case you get stuck in the airport, which companies make, by the way, that has, like, a little pillow and a blanket in it.
Yeah.
And it folds up into almost nothing and fits in your bag. Haney says one group of airline customers is particularly vulnerable. Oh, wait, let me guess. Old people. I'm going to guess it's old people.
I'm going to guess whiners.
"We did win the Passenger Bill of Rights, but it only applies to domestic flights."
Oh, damn it.
"So all of the hotline calls that we've been getting for the last 48 hours straight through solid have been from people on international flights, and they're not covered by our rule."
Let me understand this. So it's the last 48 hours straight through solid.
Do you really believe that the FlyersRights.org hotline has been, like, lit up nonstop for 48 hours?
No, I don't.
Haney gives the airlines credit for offering special deals to passengers adversely affected by snafus caused by the weather.
"I went on to all of the legacy carriers' websites 3 days before the storm hit, and they were all offering some kind of reaccommodation up to 5 days after the storm. So up until this Friday, for most air carriers, they were offering reaccommodation, and many people should have done that."
You know, I'm just guessing that somewhere, if you look inside her household, there's a very, very, very unhappy child. That's all I'm guessing.
Yeah, that voice is like, It's like a knife through butter.
That's just that is the same kind of voice that is always attached to a mother that takes the school project that you have to do that you don't really care about way too seriously and spends a disproportionate amount of time helping you make like the weird, you know, like the paper mache the volcano or something.
Last time I heard that voice, I was in Trader Joe's, and there was a kid just running around, going wherever he wanted, and she was just standing, looking at yogurt, and yelling over her shoulder, "Declan! Declan!"
Somebody says, if people like this woman also have attack poodles, why don't they just be honest? God hates them. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday. This is... Wait. Okay, here's the funny thing that just happened. So, I was just about to throw it to you.
Yeah.
So that I was just about to throw it to you, which I stopped because I saw that you were reaching for your bottle of water.
And then I realized you were going to throw it to me, so I stopped and I put the water aside.
And the reason that I was throwing it to you is because I actually had to reach into my bag down here for a second because I've got ice cream on the trackpad of my laptop over here, and it's just bothering me. So I had to
so, like dried gooey ice cream.
Yeah. Or, I have to remove that.
Okay. I'll just read the story while you clean up your mess.
Thanks so much.
Five teenagers have
look away. I'm hideous.
Is that a special wipe that you have just in case there's ice cream on your laptop?
Yes.
That's great.
Okay.
Five teenagers have been found dead. God damn it! I can't.
How can I assist you, Don?
I think I have to read a different story now that I'm laughing.
Were you about to read something tragic?
Yes.
All right. Okay.
All right. Let's.
Would it help if I just? Would it help if I just?
It wouldn't help that story. No, right. It's about death and sadness. All right. Next fall, boys and girls could be split up at Syracuse, New York's Clary Middle School. That's the proposal in front of the school board. Clary's principal wants to create different academies for boys and girls. Pamela Odom argues that since students deal with different social pressures, making this change could help students focus on learning. She says boys and girls learn differently. Teachers will participate in professional development to provide the best teaching practices geared towards both genders. Superintendent Dan Lowengard said he didn't favor the idea at first, but has since come around after hearing support from staff and teachers. I think it's really important that it's middle school because that's really the toughest stage between girls and boys, he said. I don't think it would work necessarily in elementary school, and in high school, they're young adults. The goal is to improve performance by taking social pressures out of the classroom. The Odom, who I guess is a teacher or a mom.
Also the
medley mom.
Greek god of noise.
She's already helped to lead Clary off the state's low-performing list and says this is the next step. In a written statement, she said, when students come to school, we want to continue to encourage students that academics come first, and this is a school where you can focus on learning. Parents not in favor of the idea would be able to opt out of Clary Middle School, and parents in favor would be allowed to opt in. Lowengard said he expects the group in support of the idea to be much larger.
By the way, here's an unnerving text message. This just appeared on the screen. It says, this is from our friend Seamus, which is the only reason that it's not actually creepier than it is. It says, FYI, my brother is in your building right now and leaving a package outside your door. That's sort of like the calls are coming from inside the house sort of a message there. So presumably, this is the message that he was, that his brother is now here following up on his attempted delivery Friday,
last week, yeah.
When he was trying to give us something on Friday, and that didn't really work out. So,
Seamus's brother is like lurking outside the door somewhere
right now. My brother is in your building right now and leaving a package outside your door. So I don't know whether this means that we're supposed to check it like at the end of the show, or whether I'm supposed to go over to the door right now and open it. Technology is weird because I'm actually now sitting here at a desk in Portland, speaking over the internet to Seamus. In Colorado, who is then presumably on the phone with or texting his brother, who is also in Portland, but
outside
like 10 feet away on the other side of our door. I'm just going to minimize this because it's freaking me out.
Okay.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. So is the deal with that it's just that they're splitting the boys and the girls up?
Yes.
And is it
in separate academies? So they'll actually be going, for all intents and purposes, to, I'm assuming, different schools, although I don't know if they might be on the same campus but attending different classes. What?
I'm sorry. Seamus just followed up the text by just noting that his brother is, quote, he's snatching your people up. Thank you.
I don't even know what that means.
You have no idea?
No.
Oh, man. Oh, here's the thing is you are both fortunate and unfortunate because because now I'm going to have difficulty keeping my composure. I'm glad you weren't reading another horrible story filled with tragedy and death. He is referencing a prominent internet meme from earlier this year.
Oh, is that the people be raping guy?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Coming in your windows, they're snatching your people up. All right. Well, and then he just writes it so deadpan on the screen. My brother's at your door. He's snatching your people up. Okay. All right.
You know, Seamus is kind of scary looking. He doesn't sound scary.
Yeah.
He has a very pleasant voice, but he's kind of scary looking.
Looks like an angry egg with glasses.
Yeah. So I wonder what his brother looks like. See, now I want to know.
Okay.
I'll never know because he'll have just left this gift and scampered away.
Today's show is going really strangely.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even say that it's a bad show. I'd just say that it's a little odd today. All right. Well, in any event, let me just say this about the thing of splitting the genders up in school. Here's why that's a bad idea. Because it takes guys most of their lives to figure out how to not be terrified and gangly, awkward freaks around girls anyway. And so if you just delay that, like every year you add on to the forced social interaction and commingling, it's just another year that guys are going to be retards in the workplace because they want to figure out how to actually function around women.
I guess, but I also can't help but think that something like that might be good for girls. I mean, I've read
toughen up, Don.
Well, I've read stuff about girls going to all-girls schools and saying that actually academically they ended up doing better because boys tend to be more assertive in classroom situations and girls tend to, like, you know, kind of become more reticent. And
well, that's not the fault of that. That's just,
and they get a chance to be more competitive in the classroom. And
So they get a chance to be more competitive if their competitors are removed.
Well, I'm just
saying, doesn't really seem like you're treating girls as equals. That seems like you're treating girls like people who can't possibly assert themselves in the presence of boys, which they can.
Well, yes, they can. But I'm also saying that they're right, though. Girls and boys do learn differently, and they interact differently in learning situations. And junior high school, middle school, is just hellish. It is hellish on every level, and you're just like...
It is no less hellish for boys.
No, it is no less hellish for boys, but honestly, it might be a little bit less hellish with the whole gangliness and the self-consciousness if you're actually going to school with... You're in the classroom with a bunch of other boys instead of having the girls nearby and you're trying to get that glimpse of the half-boob through the sleeveless shirt and, you know, and like, she walked by me and I just smelled her and now I can't do my math homework. You know, it just... It actually might be easier.
Yeah, I suppose. I guess in the grand scheme of things, it's another story that I don't really have to care about because I don't have kids.
Yeah, that's true.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on, we have the Rick Emerson radio program that will be broadcasting to 147 countries around planet Earth from rickemersonshow.com. So you can find out more about that again at rickemersonshow.com. Later on this hour, we have your entertainment news and science on the march. This is Don Taylor.
Five teenagers have been found dead in a Florida motel room after it was believed they left a car running overnight in a closed garage below the room. Police believe carbon monoxide poisoning may have caused the deaths of five teenagers in the Hialeah, Florida motel room. While authorities have yet to identify the victims, and that's not true. I did read another story later that they did identify them. So, but family and friends arrived at the Presidente Hotel and said they were teenagers between 17 and 19 who had checked into the motel to celebrate a birthday. Part of the party who had left the night before told police their friends had left a car below the room running. And I saw a picture of the motel, and it was like there were actually closed garages underneath on the main floor, and then the hotel rooms were upstairs. Apparently, they were afraid that the car wasn't going to start again in the morning. They were having trouble with the car, so they just left it running in the garage all night.
That was going to be my question, is like, was this some elaborately constructed suicide plot, or did they just have some... It made sense at the time, reason for just letting the car run all night.
Yeah, and the garage doors was closed. The door to the hotel room was partly open. Carbon monoxide rose and filled up the room, they all died in their sleep.
Here's what's weird. Oh, well, see, if they were asleep, I guess that makes more sense. If they parked the car, it still doesn't make sense, though. Because if you park the car in the hotel, and this is at a motel, so presumably you got to check in, you got to, like, you know, schlep all your things up. And even if you're not, you don't have things, you got to schlep yourself up to the room. And it seems like by that point, the exhaust would already be into the room, and it's not like exhaust is odorless or something. It's not like it's radon.
No, but, I mean, you're teenagers, too. You might think, wow, I can smell the car. Oh, well, let's just go to bed anyway.
Well, that's true. Maybe you haven't thought of that process all the way. Maybe if you haven't really done the A to Z in your head.
And then the worse it gets, the more unconscious you are.
That is true. Here's the thing about carbon monoxide. Do you ever notice that carbon monoxide gas smells a lot like lemon-lime Alka-Seltzer?
No, I never noticed that.
It's one of those things that you're... And, you know, when I was... Bill, let me ask you this. When you were a child, or perhaps as an adult, did you have a substance or an item or a property that you probably shouldn't have enjoyed the smell of, and yet you did?
Oh, yeah, I still have those.
Such as?
Skunk.
Yeah, see, my thing, it's like it's the smell of recently extinguished matches. Mm. You know, it's that sulfur smell
that
matches
smell.
Have. But, you know, that's probably doing something terrible to you every time you inhale it. You know, or gasoline. Yeah. I knew kids who were all about the smell of gasoline. My idiot friend Rob would just sit. Even I knew this. Like, it doesn't matter how, you know, even if the gas smells good, you don't just sit there over, like, the gas can and just, you know. And he wasn't even doing it to get high. It was just that he really found the smell pleasant. You know, but, you know, anything that's making you see, you know, dead relatives is something you probably shouldn't be smelling a lot.
Yeah, every time, it's always interesting because every time I'm driving and you'll probably, like, they've just laid down some fresh tar or like, somebody's run over a skunk. You know, almost inevitably, whoever I'm with will be like, oh, God, tar smell, or oh, my God, skunk. And there's this part of my brain that's kind of going, I kind of like that smell.
Yeah.
I realize I'm not supposed to. I know there's part of me that I know I'm supposed to find that offensive in some way, but I actually kind of like it.
By the way, somebody notes that I have a teenage daughter, and I really, really wish teenage boys would just stop smelling her. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. This is Don Taylor at the news desk.
The debate over President Obama's actual birthplace has sparked again, but this time by a fellow Democrat. Hawaii Governor Neil Abercrombie says he has the state attorneys general and the director of the Department of Health looking into what records they may be able to release legally.
This is birth.
To try and see what we can do in turn for an open process that will put those who want to disrespect the president and his parents in the proper light, which is to say they have a political agenda not worthy of any good American.
That's awesome. You know, and he ought to just call it what it is, just a public shaming.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, like, if, you know, there's going to be a bunch of idiots who cling to this mm-hmm. fiction that he was, you know, he's not an American citizen or whatever, that... I mean, that in a way is the best way to deal with it, right? You just stop government altogether. You slow the process down, and you do that thing where, you know, like all of the other governmental activities and whatever get suspended because all of the government's resources are focused on this supremely unimportant and ridiculous task. That really is the best way to respond to folks like that. So,
of course,
good on you, sir.
They're just going to find some other way to be incredibly stupid so that they don't have to just say, we don't like that he's black.
But it's not even really about that. It's just a public ridiculing and excoriation yeah. of that group of people in front of the rest of... It's just pulling their pants down in front of the rest of the country.
Abercrombie says he wants to change state law to allow the release of more papers. He said it would prove Obama was born in Hawaii and put those who want to disrespect the president and his parents in the proper light.
Obviously, I'm going to do what is legally possible. I have the Attorney General and the Director of the Department of Health looking at what we can do.
Excellent. So there you go. So there's that guy. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program will be broadcasting on these same airwaves. We have a Hick Watch / Taser Watch
yes.
coming up. Is that...
it's a tasered Hick, basically.
So it's a tasering that happened inside a trailer park.
Yes.
Okay. So we've got that coming up next hour over at RickEmersonShow.com. You can find out...
And I'm going to read that story about the grandpa who circled the airport for 3 days when he got lost over Christmas.
Excellent. And apparently we'll have something waiting outside the studio door for us. I'm not really certain what it is, what it does, how it's going to impact today's program, but we'll have that later on.
So what happens if you open the door and there's just like a bloody axe?
Well,
how freaked out do you get?
Well, I wouldn't be expecting it. I mean, at least I give him points for creativity. That would be he would have caught me off guard. I'll give him that. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Let's do science.
Here is your science on the march. For Tuesday, December 28th, 2010.
With gas at more than $3 a gallon and more people concerned about global warming, electric vehicles have found a new surge of popularity. Everyone from Olympic officials to our very...
What are you doing over there?
I'm just losing it.
Okay.
I want to read the story, but apparently it was written as an opinion piece, so I have to, like, mentally cut out all of the little asides from that are editorial. Anyway, the major hurdle for electric cars has been that the infrastructure to support them doesn't exist yet. But Honda is one of the companies trying to change that, as they've begun trial testing an electric vehicle charging station that's powered by solar energy. When car companies first began discussing electric vehicles, they planned to substitute one fossil fuel for another by using coal to generate electricity to power the vehicles instead of gasoline. But using renewable energy to power electric vehicles will cut down on carbon emissions created in the process. Honda will begin its electric vehicle testing program in three Japanese cities. The project is in collaboration with Saitama Prefecture on environmental issues. The two companies hope to achieve what they call total energy management, a system that supplies households and communities with energy for personal use while supporting a comfortable low-carbon lifestyle.
If we're going to have electric cars that are then powered at stations operated by solar power, why don't we just have solar-powered cars?
I have no idea. Why don't we just put solar panels on top of the damn cars?
I mean, that just seems ridiculous. Because the claim is always, well, you can't generate enough solar power to operate a car. Which seems patently untrue if we're using solar power to create the energy for these stations to go into the cars.
Yeah. Because they look like a line. If you've seen a line of, like four, like, you know, drive-through ATMs or the little, you know what I mean, outside a bank.
Right.
They look kind of like that. With the little roofs over them, or like at a gas station, except the roofs are nothing but solar panels.
Is this like one of those things at the airport where you plug in your BlackBerry and you stand there for 10 or 12 minutes and it jams it full of energy for like 10 bucks?
I don't know. I've never seen one of those.
Yeah, they have these little kiosks. Not even kiosks. It's like a, it looks like a phone booth, basically, except without the actual booth part. It's just like a pole in the middle with a bunch of sort of a bunch of outlets and plugs around it, and it's about this high, and it's just got little dongles coming off in every direction that you can just stick into whatever device you have, and you pay like $10, and it charges it at like five times normal speed or something.
And there's a row of them. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this just looks, but because it has the solar panels are like make a little roof, so it kind of looks like a gas station, but the roof is a solar power.
Hey, here's something I don't understand. Do you ever like rent a car? You're driving in somebody's car, and you look at the back, and it's like the car is labeled something that indicates that it's kind of a hybrid, but like not really. Like it doesn't say hybrid. When Laura and I were in the Provo, we rented this car, and on the back it said, you know, I forget what it was. I believe it may have been a Malibu, but it actually said on the back, you know, Chevy Malibu, flex fuel. And I stood there and looked at it for a while, and I thought, well, what the hell does flex fuel mean? Okay, and she said, well, maybe it means hybrid. And I said, well, why wouldn't it say hybrid? It's not like that's a trademark term.
That might be that thing where, depending on how fast you're going, it actually utilizes the engine in a different way so that you get better gas mileage, like, say, on long trips if you're not
shifting. Well,
that's
what a hybrid does, though. I mean, a hybrid
except
uses...
it's only gas, then.
What do you mean, then, utilizes the engine in a different way? That's a phrase that doesn't mean anything at all.
Well, that's a phrase,
you know,
where I'm trying to say the thing that I'm not sure exactly what the specifics
Here's what you were right now. It wasn't even that you were making things up. You know what that statement was? That was where you were the G.I. Joe Ninja Storm Shadow. And I said, what do you mean by that? And you took one of those little smoke things and you went, and you put it down and then there was just a white cloud. And then when I looked, you were gone. That's totally what it utilizes the engine in a different way. And then there was just a void where you once stood. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. This is Don Taylor.
Too much fried fish may contribute to the high rate of stroke in America's stroke belt, according to a new study. The results showed that people living in the stroke belt...
I live in the stroke belt most of my life, actually.
Including residents of North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama,
clean Mississippi, the keyboard so often.
Tennessee, Arkansas, and Louisiana, were about 30% more likely to eat two or more servings of fried fish every week than those living in the rest of the country.
Oh, my God. The stroke belt. Okay.
And blacks, who are known to have an increased risk of stroke regardless of where they live, were more than 3.5 times as likely to eat two or more servings of fried fish per week than whites.
Is that because blacks dwell in the, do they dwell in the stroke belt area more often than other folks? Does it say?
No, I believe it's a cultural thing where black people just like, in the stroke belt, like to eat more fried fish than white people.
Would you say that the, trying to figure out how to back into this. Would you?
By the way, there's also an area of the stroke belt referred to as the stroke buckle.
I was trying to get to a. Is the stroke belt larger for the black population? But I couldn't make it work. It's
no.
Just I can't quite make one fit into the other there.
The stroke belt isn't really larger, but it just looks like it.
Because of the way they shave.
Anyway, the area of the Stroke Belt that includes the coastal plains of North Carolina.
What area of the Stroke Belt are you talking about, Don?
This would be the Stroke Buckle.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Which is
right in the middle.
The coastal plains of North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia are 40% more likely to die from stroke. Eating fish can be healthy. Fish are key sources of omega-3 fatty acids, which previous studies have shown are associated with reduced risk of heart attack and stroke. However, there's evidence that frying the fish reduces the amount of omega-3 fatty acids. Frying is also associated with an increase in the food's fat and calorie content.
Wait, so we're supposed to be frying fish or we're not supposed to be frying fish?
Apparently we're not.
Okay.
Fish is good for you, but if you fry it, not only do you, lose the benefits of the omega-3 fatty acid, but you add worse things because of the fat and calories.
And am I supposed to boil it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Everybody in that for that one? Boil your fish.
You microwave it, then you put it in a blender, and you suck it through a straw.
Keep boiling your bacon, too.
Overall, just 23% of participants in the study ate the recommended 2 or more servings of non-fried fish per week. Residents of the Stroke Belt were 17% less likely to adhere to these recommendations than people in the rest of the country. So, there you go. They have more strokes, and they really like fried fish.
A Stroke Belt sounds... I'm not even really sure what that sounds like. A Stroke Belt...
Sounds like there ought to be something on your car called a Stroke Belt, doesn't there?
There's that. There's three ways to go with that. There's something automotive. There's something vehicular.
Jim Willig would sell it to you at Fantasy Adult Video.
I was just going to say something that Jim would bring to the studio this Friday, and he would demonstrate it as being the hot seller of this holiday season for the adult item enthusiast. Or that a Stroke Belt is one of those... There's one of those things that, you order out a Parade magazine for your grandmother, gives her precious moments to avoid brain loss in the event that she does have some sort of infirmity or lack of circulation to the head.
Or help her stand up in the shower after having a stroke.
Right.
You put
right.
on the Stroke Belt and it clips to something on the wall so you don't fall down.
It would just be like one of those things that, it'd be like one of those huge egg beater things that had a rubber band that they put around fat folk in the 50s. it was just like one of those hand blenders, but it was huge, and you just put it around a fat guy, and it went...
And it helps keep the circulation going so you don't get clots, and therefore you don't get a stroke.
Right, so you don't become infirm.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to take these pills, and I suggest you buy a Stroke Belt and use that every evening before bed.
Awesome. It could also be a thing with which you punish your children if you live in some of the plain states.
Yes.
All right.
Probably for eating too much fish.
That's right. Here is Don Taylor.
According to Amazon.com, their newest version of the Kindle has surpassed the final Harry Potter book, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and the Bible as the single most popular product in the history of the website. This news tops off a monumental holiday season for the online retailer, which broke records across the board. According to Amazon, the most popular book bought for the Kindle on Christmas Day itself was The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, although The Confession, a novel by John Grisham, Decision Points by George Bush, and Unbroken by Laura Hillenbrand were the most purchased e-reader books over the entire holiday season. In the movie category, the biggest sellers were Inception, Toy Story 3, and The Blind Side. The Blind Side?
Now, what was the... back on the Harry Potter thing, did you say in the lead for the story, did you say that Harry Potter had surpassed or had been surpassed?
It had been surpassed.
By The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
By the Kindle. That's the thing.
Oh, they're saying they've item, actually... Period.
The biggest item that they sold was the Kindle. Which is interesting.
Especially because it seems like the Kindle is a... It seems like that is a limited lifespan product.
Well, it also makes me wonder if... Because they're not... I can't believe that that's true. So I keep thinking that maybe what they mean is the Kindle and associated products, like the Kindle and e-books for the Kindle, were bigger sellers than the Harry Potter book.
But it doesn't say that, though.
It says the Kindle, and I find that.
I mean, I guess if you assume that the Harry Potter book is available everywhere, and the Kindle is only available from Amazon, mm-hmm. I guess that's true. There's any number of places you could be buying. I haven't purchased any of my Harry Potter books at Amazon. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
But if I was going to buy a Kindle, in other words, they've got 100% of the Kindle market. So it doesn't have to be the biggest seller in the world, just the biggest seller at Amazon. And if that's the only place you can get it, then I guess that makes sense.
On its peak sales day this year, which was November 29th, Amazon.com sold 13.7 million items. That was on November 29th. Approximately 158 sales per second.
Wow.
While Kindle purchases made up the single largest portion of those sales, Amazon also moved so many pairs of jeans that a stack of the folded pants would reach to the top of Mount Everest. They also sold more razors than the average adult male has hairs on his head.
I want to know
who figures these things out.
That's what was going to be my question. Who's had what sad soul? What intern has to sit in a room and then you know look at like the number of like rototillers that they've sold and figure out exactly like how many Japanese subways you could fill with that?
Yeah,
I mean. That's got to be the worst job on earth. They should come up with some sort of an application that does that. There should be like an iPhone app or whatever that like where you can just put in like one thing and then give it the, you know, as the unit of measurement and then give the other thing as the unit of distance, such as, you know, Kilimanjaro. And then it'll tell you like how many flapjacks it would take to like circle Kilimanjaro five times.
Now, here's how many bras Amazon sold last year. And I want to know how many breasts there are, you know, in Nagasaki. That would be awesome. That's how I would do it.
Okay.
Then I'm wrong.
All right.
Okay. Can we talk now?
Yes.
A scientist claims reindeer deliberately eat magic mushrooms to escape the monotony of their dreary long winters. Andrew Haynes believes the animals seek out the fungi in the wild. Writing in the respected pharmaceutical journal, Mr. Haynes said, they have a desire to experience altered states of consciousness. For humans, a common side effect of mushrooms is a feeling of flying, so it's interesting the legend about Santa's reindeer is that they could fly. He also said that herdsmen, people who herd reindeers, drink the reindeer's urine to get high themselves.
Okay.
And that's all the science.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. That is your Science on the March. For Tuesday, December 28th, that is the Herdsman, not the band started by James Mattingly II.
Right.
Okay. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later this hour, we have your entertainment news. Legion of News brought to you today by Squires Electric. SquiresElectric.com is their website, or 503-252-1609. James Mattingly II, by the way, two gold records with his band, the Herdsman.
Mm-hmm.
503-252-1609. Now people are just typing.
A successful producer.
People, by the way, are just typing the number of breasts in Nagasaki, by the way. He says, you know, Don, that's pretty easy to figure out. It's pretty much double whatever the female population is.
Yes, but then you have to, like, you know, figure out how many bras Amazon sold and then how many breasts would go into that many bras and therefore conflate those two things.
Are you saying that you want somebody to reveal the number of bras sold by how many bras they would be able to equip the average woman in Nagasaki with?
Or just any place in general. Like, if, say, Amazon sold this many bras, and that would be enough bras to cover the boobs of all the women in New Zealand, say.
Right. Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. By the way, somebody says you could stack 4,906 Rick Emersons end-to-end to reach the top of Mount Everest.
Really?
Parenthetically, true. After that. Huh. So, there you go. I don't even know how I was going to get back to Squires with this, but I will say that the Squires Electric helps to make this program possible and thus fills your head with tasty, tasty, nougat-like knowledge. Sort of, you know, by proxy. 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. They have free estimates and no job too small or too large. As you head into the holiday season, you know, meaning New Year's, you get into, you get into spring and then it's summer again and maybe you're going to be doing some remodeling. You're going to be building an addition onto your house. You're going to be expanding your business. It's a busy season for them because I think, frankly, there's a lot of people inadvertently setting things on fire, but they don't really come out and say that.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of guys trying to draw too much power to through a tiny little thing, and then suddenly, flambe.
Yeah, this is that time of year when you do like my dad used to do at our house, where you like just plug way too many things into one outlet, and then all of a sudden, at one point, it just goes poof, and there's a flame and a puff of smoke, like in A Christmas Story. And then there's just this big black mark on the wall, and the outlet doesn't work anymore.
I remember going over to my brother's house one time. This is one of my older brothers, where I swear to God, he had done this thing. He had, in the room, there were really only two outlets. There were there was an outlet on either side of the room and opposite walls. There's walls facing one another. And one outlet, he had, you know, like 17 different extension cords coming out of it. And then, like, I don't know, and then like a space heater, you know, and like a dorm fridge and like, I don't know, weed whacker and something, and, you know, all this crap plugged into one. But then he was complaining that the cords were getting really, really hot. So I swear to God, then he just started plugging fans in to the outlet on the other side of the room to blow on the cord of the outlet across the room. And it was at that point that I just sort of, I mean, and I was only like 11, and I think I just opted to tell my mom that I really didn't want to stay there anymore because it just seemed like it was a matter of time until he was going to turn up in the evening news. So you're probably not that guy. However, you know, electricity is a mystifying, quasi-magical thing, depending on your level of science knowledge. So if you want to get your house, up to speed in terms of the amount of things you can plug into a room. If you moved into an older house, sometimes they only have one or two outlets into, in a room. If you want to get your Ethernet wiring taken care of, or if your business just wants to make sure that they have all your bandwidth requirements taken care of, you can contact Squires Electric, and they will get that taken care of. 503-252-1609. They, in fact, wire the entire building that we are broadcasting to you from right now. True. This entire building wired by Squires Electric. 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. Here is Don Taylor.
It's been nearly a year since the Obama administration said it would close the Guantanamo Bay military prison, but it appears the facility is not scheduled for closing anytime soon. White House spokesman Robert Gibbs says Republicans who oppose the closing have to be willing to listen to national security officials about how al-Qaeda uses Guantanamo to recruit.
Al-Qaeda recruits young people to do harm, to try to blow up airplanes, to blow up themselves and kill others. They use that as a recruiting tool. And the question is, are we going to continue to have and let al-Qaeda use Guantanamo Bay as a recruiting?
Gibbs credits the new bipartisanship that occurred during the lame duck session of Congress to GOP gains in November's election. Gibbs said going forward, Republicans will share the glory and the blame.
They understand that to a certain degree they have had over the past few weeks in this lame duck session. And they're definitely going to have on January 5th responsibility for running half of Congress.
Yeah, he credits the bipartisanship to the GOP gains in the election.
They can't afford any longer to just simply sit and say no. They have to be part of a constructive conversation.
Oh, yeah, that'll happen.
It's just like listening to cardboard talk. Here's Don Taylor.
More than 30 million people visit Disney World every year, but as lines grow and attention spans shrink, operators of the happiest place on Earth have turned their attention to the fine art of technologically sophisticated crowd control. Over the past year, Disney managers have built an underground command center geared to make having fun more efficient.
Sure, over the past few years.
Located under Cinderella Castle, the new center uses video cameras, computer programs, digital park maps, and other tools to spot gridlock before it forms and deploy countermeasures in real time.
Putting it underneath Cinderella Castle just makes it sound even more sinister, because doesn't that sound like, that sounds like one of those things where like one of those Air Force One type things where they would take the president if they were in the event of some nuclear attack, you know? Cinderella Castle.
If a ride is overcrowded, the center can send out more cars, reroute a parade to direct visitors elsewhere, or simply keep them busy with inline video games. Similar measures are employed at park restaurants, and Imagineers are testing out ways to incorporate smartphone credit card-enabled watches to help guests experience some kind of magic. Disney maintains the command center is intended to make visitors happier and more magnanimous with their money, but whether or not people are happier, they are getting more done. While pre-command center guests average 9 Magic Kingdom rides a trip, since the center opened, the number has increased to 10.
I'm just picturing, first of all, I got two things. One, I'm just picturing some guy who's standing in line, or he's eating at one of the many fine Disney World restaurants, and he's just causing some sort of a ruckus, or he's being loud, and then all of a sudden, just like surreptitiously, you know, without even really noticing it, just some sort of like a fire hose nozzle just comes out of a shrub behind him, and then silently sinks back down. Meanwhile, down at the Cinderella, in the Cinderella Fortress or whatever, a guy sort of smugly, turns a switch back and goes back to his daily routine. Secondly, doesn't it seem like there's a fantastic horror movie to be made here about the day that the machinery at Disneyland just goes crazy?
Well, wasn't that what Westworld was about, basically?
I guess, but I mean, think of how much more, think of how far beyond that we are now with reality. I mean, with the way that things, imagine, this is as I always say about the government and their, and then what the government is willing to reveal to us about testing or about, genetic experimentation or, mice that can whistle. Imagine what they're not revealing. Well, imagine what Disney probably has that we don't know about, that they don't put in a news story. Because this is something that Disney obviously put in a press release. So, what do they have that they're just keeping secret from the rest of us?
Well, even when I was a youth, back in the olden days, they're pretty technologically advanced. They've always had closed-circuit cameras in all of the rides, and people are able to watch people go through the rides at various times to make sure nobody's jumping out of a car and because that happens. I was on Pirates of the Caribbean once when the whole thing stopped because a guy was drunk and he jumped out in the big treasure room and was trying to grab treasure. So they just ground everything to a halt while security went and got the guy. But also they would there were in some of the rides, like the Haunted Mansion, there were actually smoke detectors in each of the cars. And it was a smoke detector that you were unaware of, but would signal the ride operators. And they would, like, get security. And this happened to a friend of mine. He lit a cigarette in the Haunted Mansion and was met by security when he got off the ride, who checked him out and made sure that, yes, he was indeed only smoking a cigarette. And that you weren't supposed to smoke in any of the rides, sir. And he wasn't hauled off like another friend of mine was when I was in high school, who somebody smoked marijuana in one of the restrooms. And my friend was detained by security because he was obviously stoned. And he was taken underground to what we used to call Mickey Mouse Jail. And he was trying to explain to them, like, what could he say? He was obviously impaired. And like, as he said later, he goes, what am I going to say to them? I'm not stupid enough to smoke in the bathroom. I got high on the boats.
So when they take him down underground, is that like one of those where he can get the money but he has to take the hammer? Things, or is it just, or do they just like stick him in a white room and just stare at him for a while? And
basically, yeah, they have a whole security area where all the security guys are, and they even have cells if they need to detain somebody who is violent. They actually have cells there, and then they decide if they're just going to kick you out of the park or if they're going to call the police
That's
to come
fantastic.
And take it.
Excellent. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
A man from Rochester Hills, Michigan, could face up to 5 years behind bars for reading his wife's emails. Oakland County prosecutors charged Leon Walker, 33, with an anti-hacking felony normally reserved for identity theft or stealing trade secrets. Leon Walker, Clara Walker's third husband, broke into his wife's Gmail account on her laptop and discovered she was having an affair with her second husband. He then forwarded the emails to Clara Walker's first husband, who's the father of her child. Leon Walker told the Detroit Free Press he had to do it for the sake of the child because the second husband was once arrested for beating Clara in front of the boy.
Does it give any elaboration on the phrase, he, quote, broke into her Gmail account? What does that mean, do you suppose?
Well,
is that like she was logged in and he read something? Doesn't seem like it's a thing you can break into.
Yeah, the whole story is really, like, sketchy and weird because apparently Clara Walker's lawyer said that Leon Walker, the husband, he is a computer technician. He used his skills to violate her privacy. But he said that it was a family computer that everyone used, and she had all the passwords written in a little book.
On a post-it note, stuck to the monitor.
Yeah, apparently the passwords were readily available. So he didn't break into anything. But, you know, she filed for divorce, and they're trying to, like, file charges against him for hacking, for reading her email.
Here's the thing. Hacking is one of those terms that I would say, like, 99% of the time it's used in a story, it's used incorrectly.
Yeah.
That's a thing that it is almost never used right. Also, I think this might have happened maybe while I was... I think this happened while I was in Provo, so I don't know that we talked about it. Did we do the story about the Gizmodo passwords that all got... They got released, they got revealed?
That happened while we were on break.
Did you read through the whole list of the passwords? And it's like on Gizmodo where you just sort of... I sort of assume that there was a higher class of reader that was patronizing that site that wouldn't use 123456 as their password. I mean, and then did you go through the list and look at the top?
No, people still use password as their password of the time.
The top 10 were all variations on the word password on 123456, and then the word monkey. For no reason.
Really?
I think I've got the list somewhere. It was the top 15. It was all, like, numbers, and it was all just consecutive numbers. Password, user, sometimes guest, monkey. And then there was trust no one, which is Fox Mulder's password from X-Files. And then that's it. And then, you know, and then the rest were all just, like, you know, it was like John or something.
Yeah, I always like in movies and television shows where somebody has to sit down and figure out somebody's password.
Yeah.
And there's always something.
Get me their purse.
Like, yeah, and it's like, you know, it's the name of their kid or it's where they went on vacation or something like that. And it's like, I have three passwords that I use all the time. One is just a word. One is actually a random string of letters that was the password they gave me on my very first email account like 15 years ago. And it means nothing.
Right.
And the other one is the name of a movie that nobody knows that I even like.
It was the, I think, for the longest time I used as, and I don't know if it's anymore, but for the longest time I used as the password for one of my email accounts, the string of numbers that was, in fact, the email address for an old Prodigy account. So it was like 75329995561 at Prodigy, you know, or whatever. And like that was, you know, like that was the password. I actually have this whole complicated system I do for generating a random series of words and letters that are all like, and then I do, and then I'm so anal about it because I do the thing of like interspersing. I make it all cap sensitive, and then I intersperse uppercase and lowercase letters. And then I'll occasionally,
of course you do.
And then it's like I'll occasionally just phonetically write out numbers instead of actually using the numerals, which means that like once a week or so, I actually sit there for about 12 minutes just staring at the screen like a gibbon, trying to figure out exactly how I'm supposed to log into something. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Still to come, your entertainment news. Here is Don Taylor.
This is the entertainment.
Yeah,
news.
Oh boy, howdy! I'm a genius.
Look at that. Sir Elton John and his partner David Furnish welcemed Baby Boy on December 25th. Zachary Jackson Levon Furnish John was born by a surrogate in California, weighing 7 pounds, 15 ounces, and measuring 22 inches long. The birth comes a year after John and Furnish attempted to adopt a young Ukrainian boy, but were denied by that country's government. The pair were joined in a civil partnership ceremony in England in 2005. Together, they produced the upcoming animated film Romeo and Juliet, which will be released on February 11th. Reality TV star Amber Portwood, 20, is being held in a Madison County jail in Anderson, Indiana. On Monday, Portwood was formally charged with 3 counts, 2 felony, 1 misdemeanor, of domestic battery related to alleged physical attacks against her ex-fiancé, Gary Shirley, and 1 count of neglect against a dependent, their daughter, Leah, who's age 2. Bail was set at $5,000. She, I guess, is part of one of these reality shows about teenage moms.
Oh, yes, 16 and pregnant, okay. I think, is where she's from.
Which I've mentioned before, I have this subscription that I got from somewhere for this OK magazine, and I don't know who, like, a third of these people are. And she's one of the ones that they write stories about, and I not only don't care, but I have no idea who she is.
That's the thing about the tabloids. The Inquirer is a notable exception to this. But if you look at the front of the tabloids, it's always the, you know, it's like Jordan spills her secrets about her first love. It, whatever, and it's always a reality star that I don't recognize. Although I found out, I went up yesterday, and my wife was apparently, she had yesterday was Monday, so she had Monday off. And she apparently spent the better part of the afternoon watching a marathon of The Real Housewives of Atlanta. And it was like, I think I came home a little bit earlier than she was expecting me to. And it was like she was just watching porn or something. And she closed the laptop. And I said, what are you watching over there? And she said, nothing. And I said, what are you watching? And she just said, Real Housewives of Atlanta. Shut up! And it's like she immediately, like she didn't even wait for me to say anything. It's like I didn't even get to open my mouth with a rejoinder. So I have like so little taste for reality programming that I am, with every passing day, like the pop culture train in that regard is leaving me further and further behind at the station.
Black Swan star Natalie Portman, 29, is engaged to choreographer Benjamin Millipede. Really? His name is Millipede?
Benjamin Millipede?
I'm sure it's not pronounced that way.
Millipede?
Millipede.
Millipede.
Yeah.
Okay.
I sort of got it spelled Millipede.
All right.
And the couple are expecting their first child. Portman said she and Millipede met while shooting Black Swan, which earned the actress a Golden Globe nomination and a Screen Actors Guild Award nomination.
By the way, somebody wants to note that $5,000 is less bail than Michael Vick had, and she was beating humans.
Yeah.
So, hey, did you see that thing about Michael Vick yesterday?
I try not to see anything about Michael Vick.
Oh, it's awesome. So your president, Barack Obama.
Oh, yes, I did see that.
Called the owner of the Philadelphia Eagles to congratulate him on hiring Michael Vick.
Screw you.
Well done.
President Obama. That's what I want to say right now. Thank God I live in a country where I can just say this. Screw you, President Obama, for congratulating this guy for hiring a freaking dog torturer.
Yeah.
Screw you.
It's moments like that where I'm so glad that I never believed. I'm glad that I never had hope or faith. I'm glad that I never really believed anything was going to be different, because now I have no dreams to be crushed on. I'm already down to singularity.
And screw every single person who pops up on my Facebook every once in a while saying how he deserves a second chance. And everyone deserves a second chance. And he did some community service. And he said he's sorry.
And he wants to adopt a dog, by the way, too.
And now he's a hero. Screw all of you. As people immediately start unfriending me at Facebook, and I don't care. care.
Okay.
Leon Rimes and Eddie Cibrian got engaged over the holidays, her rep told People magazine. Rimes, 28, sported a large diamond ring on the Malibu beach Monday during a sit-down with ABC's Robin Roberts that aired last month. The couple, who met while filming the Lifetime movie Northern Lights while they were both married, said they hoped the fact their romance continued a year and a half later could turn their affair from a tabloid story into a love story. And yeah, they're getting married. And that happened.
Okay. How you doing over there?
I'm fine.
All right.
I'm sorry. It makes me so angry.
Yes. Yes.
So angry.
I was sort of surprised it didn't show up in today's news pile, actually.
I don't want to talk about him and I don't want to experience this rage.
I would say that ship has sort of sailed, though. I mean, really. I mean, if you're gonna eat the cake, you might as well have it, is my point. So, you know, the weird thing about Michael Vick, I mean, apart from, like, everything, is just, it is strange and yet, I guess, sort of predictable what a complete full circle that guy has done. You know, from being, you know, a huge NFL star to, you know, then being excoriated and being a pariah and then being, you know, in prison. And now he's like actually, you know, they're talking about him being MVP again.
Yeah,
and then the leader of the free world is calling, going, well done on hiring that guy.
Yeah,
because they did, because the thing is, and somebody's noting that he played an especially great game or whatever, but but even logistically, like, that makes no sense. It's not like Obama called to congratulate Vic or ever talked to him. They actually just called. Like, I think it was completely separate from whatever acumen or skill he was showing on the gridiron. It was actually just calling the owner.
Good business decision you made there, sir.
To congratulate the guy for hiring him. Because it's difficult for felons in the outside world, which was Obama's justification for calling, is that it's difficult for prisoners to get a second chance. Which I'm sure he needed because he was destitute.
Yeah, because he had it really rough
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program continues the whimsy at rickemersonshow.com. Don't forget, you can get this program, Legion of News, that is, via iTunes, as well as a direct MP3 download here or legionofnews.com. And on your mobile device as well, that is mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
A frustrated cab driver unwittingly delivered a man carrying a bag that was filled with nearly $500,000 in drugs to officers at the Rogers Park District Police Station over the weekend. The driver, who asked not to be named, said he picked up a fare in the Lincoln Park neighborhood on Saturday afternoon and took the man to an address in Rogers Park. This is in the Chicago area, by the way. The passenger, later identified by police as Joseph Andrew Hoffman. Oh, yeah, this isn't entertainment anymore.
Okay, so. I was wondering how this is fitting into the entertainment.
I just get so hyped up with that music. The passenger, later identified by police as Joseph Andrew Hoffman, 25, chatted on his phone for about half the trip, but was unconscious by the time they arrived at the destination. The cab driver tried to rouse the man for about 10 minutes before driving to the police station. Police searched the man's bag and found bottles of a clear crystalline substance connected by wires to a power source, which together apparently amounted to a miniature methamphetamine lab. The street value of the drugs in the man's bag was nearly $450,000.
You know, here's the thing about the meth guys is they seem to be reducing this to like a smaller and smaller sort of square footage required, because there was a time when you had to have like the full trailer. Or if you watch Breaking Bad, you know, they have the Winnebago that's full of that stuff. And then it's like you see the guys with the full kitchen sink. And now I saw some story the other day where there's some method of creating meth that, I swear to God, it only requires you to have like a bleach bottle. Literally, like if you have an old Clorox bottle.
That must be what this is, because bottles of a clear crystalline substance connected by wires to a power source and
this
in his bag.
So there was that. The thing they were talking about on the, it was on CNN, I think they had a piece on it. It actually didn't even require a power source. I swear to God, it was like you would just put the stuff into the bleach bottle and then just shake it for a while.
Oh.
And then apparently, meth. And there you go. So.
Well, this guy was taken to the hospital. He was unconscious. And apparently he regained consciousness long enough to tell the police that he consented to a search of his residence, they say, where they found small bags of marijuana, $1,400 in cash, drug paraphernalia, and a gallon jug filled with GHB.
Excellent.
You know, roofies.
Okay.
So he's charged with 6 felony counts and held on $100,000 bail.
Let's do one more here. We'll bring the curtain down on the episode of Legion of News for today.
Oh, see, it should be something cheery to end the day with. All right.
Don, turn your frown upside down. No one likes a frowny face. All right, now let that ray of sunshine come out in your voice.
Authorities in Northern California say a man released from a hospital after a psychiatric evaluation stole a taxi and tried to register it at the Department of Motor Vehicles. Authorities told the Contra Costa Times the 26-year-old Jermaine Gross was arrested Monday on suspicion of auto theft and forgery. He's been sent to the county's regional medical center in an involuntary psychiatric hold. After his release from a psychiatric evaluation on Sunday morning, he shared a taxi with a woman who was going to a San Pablo hospital. Authorities say when they arrived, he asked the driver to help with the woman's luggage, then drove away in the yellow minivan. He was arrested after a DMV worker in El Cerrito reported he was using forged documents to try and register the cab as his own.
Wah, wah. Excellent. On that note, we will end this episode of Legion of News for Tuesday, December 28th, 2010. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com. At the news desk for Legion of News, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Konakoa, and etc. Thank you all for joining us. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, won't you please?
What?